All right, we are live right now in the daytime, as there is a lot to talk about on this show, and sorry that we have not had a show since the last time. I know it feels like every time we say we're going to do two shows in a week, something happens. This time I got sick, so unfortunately I spent my birthday and laying in a bed. Well, the day before my birthday, then I had to go work, and then we do a whole lot other than watch a movie. So, but hey, get to bring in the year 35 of my life with this wonderful person over here to my right. If you're watching on video, Eric Watkins.
Since you had that terrible start, it's bound to get better. At least that's how it is for me.
Hey, that's the important thing, that at least it gets better at some point. So, you know, we... It seems like every day we've had something happen, and we were going to, the deal was this supposed to actually happen on Tuesday. Didn't happen until today because I keep falling asleep when I get home from work. I apologize to those, to y'all folks. But either way, it kind of works out because now we're a day or two away from knowing what the MLS Cup final is going to be. And also, so we'll talk about what the lead up is to that and some interesting results that have happened. Some folks don't know how to shoot penalties and on a certain team in Tennessee, and New England becomes yet the latest team to break the record for most points in a season and then become eliminated in their first game. Is there something to do with the fact that they had such a huge layoff? I don't know. Maybe ask Colorado, because they went through the same thing and they also lost. So we'll talk about all of that. But first, we should probably start with, because it's the most recent thing, and I know folks that tune in for the American stuff probably don't care about this, but hey, you know, this is our show. It's what we enjoy talking about. So the Manchester United now have their interim manager. So they're done with the interim. Now it's the interim manager, Ralf Rangnick, who, Eric, is a very much different type of coach from what they've had. A very disciplinarian coach, a very I want my team organized a certain way kind of coach. He likes to press, the father of the Gegen press. What do you think about the hire of Ralf Rangnick?
Well, I appreciate really what United is doing. First of all, getting this hire sort of right, and okay, you're going to have time to bring in your system right now on the pitch. Then you're going to be a consultant for two. Leave your system in place, figure out what's going on, and then we'll still have your imprint forward. Looking at his ideal tactics, how he's been playing career, managerial career, to me, it's a bit of like almost a shock adjustment. Because again, as you mentioned, with the Gegen press, just a sort of pressing style, mostly favoring a lot of younger players, so it's going to be an interesting mesh how he boots with this system right now until he says, all right, now we're bringing in younger guys. Now we're going to be more physical and everything else. It's going to be an interesting watch, and I'm excited in some ways, nervous, but excited.
Yeah, I really have liked, I've tried to watch as much as I can. Well, mostly until today, really, due to visas and other, you know, regulations. Now that you had Brexit, they thought that he was going to have issues really coming in and be the manager, but they resolved those. He was actually at the game against Arsenal, and he got to watch firsthand. We'll get into the game in a little bit here, but he finally had his first interview as manager this morning, and he had some very interesting things to say, you know, and I really just, he seems like a person that he knows what he wants to do, and he has a plan. And he really wants to do what he can. He said, look, don't expect much differences going into the Crystal Palace game on Sunday, because there's only so much you can actually change in that little bit of time. They only have one training session because of the midweek game. And the players that played against Arsenal can't train today. So, you know, they'll get into that when they can. But obviously, that's a big system that you're now having to implement. They're not going to be able to do that in 2 days, but hopefully you will see a little bit of, you know, more organization, more of a plan of how you're going to play and how they move from covering one going forward to the other, you know, if you lose the ball, what you're going to do, which that's a big deal with Gengen press, right? If you go really high to press the ball or lose the ball, what you do in that transition, you're going to try to score really fast, which that's the whole point. I think when some of the years where he was manager, Red Bull had the highest goals after a turnover of any of the teams in the Bundesliga. That's what he's trying to do, of like, in 10 seconds of when you get the ball back, you're supposed to try to score, because that's when everybody's at their, you know, not paying attention or not organized as quickly. So we will see how much of that really gets implemented in the times that he has. He has quite a number of games coming up. You know, after Crystal Palace game, he has that game the next weekend. Then he has the midweek game against Young Boys, which is now in doubt, apparently, because of the new COVID strain, Omicron. The UK has been put on the list by Switzerland of, you know, concerns. So we shall see what happens with that game, if it actually gets played or not, which, you know, United's already qualified. And I think they're already qualified in first, regardless of what happens. But it is important for Young Boys, because that can determine whether they get into a Europa spot or, you know, even possibly qualify themselves. I'm not sure how that works at the moment. But let's look at the game. It's the last one for Michael Carrick. He decided right after the game, literally going out of the tunnel, he told the players and then announced that he is done with Manchester United. He has to take some time off. And then obviously with what he's been able to do in his time in charge, take that and try to get a job somewhere, which you'd imagine with his pedigree he would. What did you think of the game itself? Obviously, United win 3-2. Weird goal by Smith Rowe, with some controversy there on how that happened. And two goals by Ronaldo, one by Fernandez, one by Odegaard right after the first Ronaldo goal. I mean,
honestly, especially with that first goal, yeah, it was in a weird, quirky situation, and everybody was looking, oh, you know, Fred stepping on De Gea, all this and that. To me, the referee, Martin Atkinson, he really made a dog's dinner of it. I get that he didn't blow the whistle because the ball, it would have appeared to look like initially touched him, but on replay it didn't. But then he sees De Gea down, like, right near his goal line, still doesn't blow the whistle, and all of this, Smith Rowe naturally scores. And I'm like, you can't be mad at him for something like that. You're taking advantage because you don't hear any. VAR looks in. Rightfully, there wasn't a foul, so they give the goal. But normally when you would have had that moment of shell shock in earlier matches this past three time under Carrick, it's like, all right, we know what we have to do. We've got our formation set, and we know how we have to attack to really get a little bit more possession, keep that possession, and create new chances. And that was something that every time Arsenal got in front, United was able to do. Keep getting back, keep getting back. Fernandez' goal was wonderful. And then Ronaldo, of course, doing Ronaldo things. Congratulations on scoring both 800 and 801 perfectly, that it happened at the Theater of Dreams. So it was what we're used to, these typical United wins as of late. But it gave me more encouraging signs.
Yeah, certainly. That's one thing I will say. Under Carrick, I felt like they were much more organized. I don't know if there was so much a plan as so much of a, I feel like I have more of my button on what I want them to do. And with Ole, it more felt like, okay, well, we're just going to put the team out here. They're going to go and do their thing. Maybe you would have eventually seen a pattern of play for Michael Carrick that would have been similar to Ole, but with more direction, right? And I feel like that's what I got out of this whole thing with Carrick, is for one, he had three games. He did more than just the bare minimum. He got two wins and a draw against Chelsea. That is, you know, huge for them. And then he got the win that got him to Villarreal. Again, the first two games, I think you saw a lot more of the Ole. You know, you saw more of they had to be given gifts to be able to get their goals and stuff like that, outside of the Sancho goal at the end and the Champions. This one felt more like, oh, finally, we're going to have a little bit more punch. We're going to have a bit more of a, we're going to have, there wasn't necessarily control of the game, but there was a bit more direction of, okay, Fred is going to be moving forward a bit more, and McTominay is going to sit back. And so Fred is going to join the attack more. We saw that he was involved. He unfortunately was the one that caused De Gea to go down, which is why the goal counts, which I think is a great job by Martin Atkinson of actually not blowing the whistle, because it allowed VAR to go back, realized that his own player had knocked De Gea down and allowed the goal to stand. Had you not had that ability, perhaps then you're going to have to go and make a mess of it, and then you call it back because you think it's an Arsenal player that took De Gea down. Also bad on De Gea as well to turn your back on the play. I don't understand. It didn't look like much of a foul, especially because once the play had already started, he's already up again. So I don't know what that was all about, if he was trying to just get the referee to call something. But to me, I don't think that was the best move by De Gea. It's weird to just see him turn his back to the play and to stay down during that entire movement. And obviously, Fred's the only one that knows what happened, so he's the one who puts his hands up. But, I think you saw it more on the other goals. Obviously, he's the one that draws the penalty to get Manchester United that third goal for Ronaldo to get the 8-0-1. That second goal was fantastic. Sancho to Rashford to Ronaldo there. And you had, other chances. I mean, Fernandes also has to do with Sancho and Fred as well. So I think that's the main key thing that you saw. I like the fact that he had more adventure in trying different back fours, right? You saw Telles get a shot. You saw Dalot get in this game. But, he obviously, some of that was due to the fact that Maguire couldn't play because suspended for the Premier League game against Chelsea. But still, I like the fact that he was a bit more adventurous, with that. He tried to find out which worked the best. And sometimes I really feel like perhaps I really like Wan-Bissaka. I don't think, he's actually one of their better players. So necessarily but I really like Telles, I think, a bit more than Luke Shaw right now. It feels like he's a bit more clued in. He's good on the set pieces, on when you need, corners. So I don't think I have a problem with per se that. I think that might be one of the changes that you might see with Ragnick, of trying to get these younger players and faster players in.
Yeah, because, with his methodology, you get the bonus of being with set piece, everything in motion on the attack. But as we'd mentioned, it's all about not just having this lead overall, but being able to have that at the right time, especially on a counter, especially in Telles definitely provides that. And I honestly think that it's going to be some major, but more benefits with United's academy, because if you're going to see this necessary influx of U20 players, well, hey, if you can bring them up internally, that's going to reap more benefit.
I don't know that we're going to go to that front. I think the focus is still that they need to win games and they have to continue to progress.
Oh, yeah, and I'm saying, for this season, yes. Right. But in that consultancy role, that goes until 2024. That's in a more long-term extra thing moving forward after this.
Yeah, I just think that consultancy role is – we'll see how much actually that matters. I think that really depends on everything that happens in the 6 months. If Ragnick goes on some big run and, say, United is really, up there with the other three, then – I think you really need to give him that power and say, hey, he is going to be our new director of football, and you need to kind of have him talking to whoever your next manager is. Or perhaps he even does so well that they really have to consider, because there are rumors, if you look at what Fabrizio Romano's been saying, somebody that will come up again pretty soon here. Why? Because transfers is coming, and that's his big deal. But he's been talking about Ragnick really behind the scenes, without mentioning it, because he knows he can't talk about it right now. He really wants to become the actual current man. He wants to stay being the manager. He doesn't want to just be around for 6 months. And then, because we all know consultancy roles are just kind of, you show up on a Zoom meeting. Yeah, you're here, there. You're not necessarily always involved in everything. And you already have a technical director with Darren Fletcher. And then let's say a Mauricio Pochettino comes in. Do you think he really wants to be telling some guy some German guy telling him what to do, that has nothing to do with the way he plays?
You have a point there.
I don't know how that's going to all work necessarily, if you're going to have these three different. Now, if you want him to be your director of football, right, and he's the one that actually looks and tries to find players, right, and say, okay, well, you tell me what kind of player you want to find. Well, he actually knows how to look for talent. And that's the problem, right? You haven't had a guy that actually knows how to recruit and knows how to look for talent in Manchester United. Look at the rest of the pool, the three at the top, what they have all found, what they all have is being able to find talent. Obviously, Chelsea and Manchester City have the money to just be able to blow on any talent they want. You know, the hell, but he has a name, but they're also really good at finding talent that maybe you don't, you know about, and then turning them into a star player, right? Mm-hmm. So that, and then Liverpool is just really good at finding talent, period, at which is, you can say that's an American hallmark, and say, and put them on the field, right? And they've been lucky this year that they really haven't had a lot of injuries, and they've been able to really make a run of it. But Manchester United just, they have not been able to find a cohesive unit that works and be able to bring those guys forward. You're spending a lot of money, but they're just on individual, right? And so that's what you're hoping that Ragnick can, not only in the 6 months and with the January window, let's see who he tries to bring in. Does he bring in guys from Germany? There's already a Red Bull midfielder that he's really looking at, that is in the rumor mill that they really want to bring him in. And, you know, let's see. I'm really excited to see what he is going to bring order to a team that really hasn't had that in a while. And I think all the rumors about Ronaldo, oh, he's not going to play. Look, right now you can't not play Ronaldo. He's the guy scoring your goals. So you're going to have mm-hmm. to figure out whether it's, you know, you have Rashford and Sancho pressing for him while he goes and just tries to stay up top and does the initial press. And then after that, he doesn't really necessarily go back all the time. But he can run if he wants to, right? Or if he needs, there's those moments you've seen him where he goes crazy. He'll run back down. You know, it's not all the time. He's 37. Like, he's not going to be able to do that all the time. But he can do it if I just can't do it, the whole 90 minutes. That's something that we're going to have to see. And I really, that's the one thing I forgot to tell you when we were talking about. I like the fact that Carrick finally figured out Sancho needs to go play on the right side.
Yep.
You're not going to go spend money. You're not going to go spend a bunch of money on this man and then he doesn't play ever. Like, go figure out how to make it work where these guys can play. And they figured it out. You know, now, I don't know if Bruno is still, that's his best position necessarily. But again, that's not Carrick's problem to figure out anymore. It's not Ralph Ragnick's to figure out. So, and how is Cavani going to fit into all this? Which I think Cavani actually works with Ragnick really well because he likes to move up and down and run a lot. And so we'll see how this all works out. I don't know that we're necessarily going to see that against Crystal Palace. We'll probably start seeing the remnants of it. But I think after that is when we're going to really start seeing that become a thing. So exciting times now. If you're a Red Devils fan, let's see what happens pretty quickly on Sunday and beyond. So moving away from that, big win for the team. Now they're in, what is it, seventh. Mm-hmm. Only a few points behind Arsenal and Tottenham. So they can easily go up to fifth, say some results happen their way after the weekend. Moving on to MLS now. Major League Soccer has semifinals are over. Now their conference finals are set. And some of the teams that you did not think would be the ones that are going to progress certainly have. And the one that I think most people did not think had a chance after their ridiculous no shots on goal, nothing against the perennial Seattle Sounders, and then win in penalty kicks and sudden death, go on to play Sporting Kansas City, another standard bearer of the Major League Soccer, another team that, you know, Peter Vermes has been there for a long time. Oh, man, you know how his teams play. This is what they do. A revenge a little bit for the game that where they felt they should have had a higher seat because Real Salt Lake didn't get a handball called on them. Well, just desserts for Sporting Kansas City because it didn't work out. Bobby Wood goes and gets the goal, not necessarily at the death, but very close to it, to put them up 2-1 and get the win for Real Salt Lake. What a surprise.
I mean, if you really look at it, and I went to that Seattle match, and it's like, okay, you were being kind of like outmanned, overpowered. They're not letting you have any. So you decide, all right, we can still play in the condition. Let's play for extra time. They got there. Those 30 minutes hunkered down. They played for penalties. Anything can happen. But that gave RSL really, it sounds cliche, but such a belief that, all right, if we can have that many things go against us in 120 minutes and we still find a way to prevail, we can go out like gangbusters and pretty much beat anybody. Sporting Kansas City, so in their first match, they were heavily favored and had some great goals off of set pieces. That seemed to be the theme of the first two rounds.
And that Graham Soucy blast.
Exactly. Those things, like, it didn't happen. RSL's like, all right, we're playing our way. They're feeding into our hands. Let's go and we do it again. And they just keep going and going. Now here they are.
Yeah, but, man, talk about a Cinderella story right now for Real Salt Lake. Can they get there and be another standard of the Major League Soccer in Portland? Get the win on Colorado, 1-0. Colorado had some chances, but again, you have to think about that long layoff. Does that make a difference for your team? And, you know, you're at home on Thanksgiving. It's a big, pressure moment for them. And then you don't deliver, and Portland gets an undermanned Portland, I should say, gets the big, big goal. They get the win. Asprilla with a stupid red card for punching down on Clark, literally. And now he misses the next game. But Portland goes through. And now it's Real Salt Lake and Portland on the west side. So that game will be happening this weekend. And then, of course, on the east side, you have Nashville, which unfortunately, Erica, knocked out your team, Orlando. And we were terrible.
I'll say it. We were terrible. Anytime we get scored to 7, we deserve to.
Yeah, Mukhtar has been fantastic for them in the playoffs here. And he does that again, getting the goal. But then Andre Blake, what else is there to say about the keeper that can see the best goalkeeper in all of MLS? And he goes and saves 2 penalties. And then Walker Zimmerman, and I can't remember who the other player is, just absolutely woof on the other penalties. And they do not score a single one. The penalty shootout ended 2-0 as Philadelphia did get one of theirs saved as well. I mean, what a terrible penalty shootout. And then Nashville to just go out that way as well. You know, they had opportunities to win it in the extra time. Philadelphia go on, and they are now the higher seed there. So that conference final will be played in Philadelphia. They're going to be playing NYCFC, Eric. England were eliminated in penalties as well. This was a thrilling game, though. NYCFC went up really quickly, and then New England scored pretty quick after that. Tati Castellanos gets a yellow on a really bad foul on Andrew Farrell that comes back to haunt him later in the match. The game stays that way till extra time. You have NYCFC go up again, thanks to Castellanos on a header where he just absolutely just outmanned and then gets a really bad foul. It's a really bad foul where he clips the guy, no ball at all. Castellanos sitting there almost crying to the ref to tell him, please don't give me the yellow card.
You saw that, but he was done. And I looked at it and I'm like, no. And after all of that, for as good as that game was, and then this was another one where it had a moment of controversy, 6 yellow cards. But if you look at that very first foul, right a few minutes before the first yellow card, which was Maxi Morales, there should have been a 7. Everybody was looking at that, and it's like there was no ball. It was a little bit late. Pretty much anywhere that's a yellow. Ref put his card in his pocket. It went on. He couldn't keep your card in your pocket anymore, as you saw. But
yeah, and that helped a lot to get that second goal off Tejan Buchanan with a really good goal on his part. So you go to extra time, you end out the extra time on that, and then you go to penalties. And well, New England, Sean Johnson makes one save, and that's all that New England, that's all on NYCFC to make that one save. NYC hits the rest of their penalties, and they win. And so NYCFC gets to go on, but no Tati Castellanos for the actual conference final. They got to play without him. That's going to be a big blow to go against the Philadelphia team. And now the East is set, Philadelphia and NYCFC. Philadelphia is the team that has, I think their entire history, they have not been to the MLS Cup. That 10 years. It has been their entire history. NYCFC, I think, is on the fifth in that list. In their entire history, they have not been in the conference final or the MLS Cup final. So you'll have a new debutante on that end. Portland, obviously, has been there before. RSL have been there before as well. But that's going to be interesting. Will the Cinderella story continue for the West side, which I really hope it does. I hope we see Real Salt Lake make the final. I think that they have the most interesting team. David Ochoa has been clutch for them. He's made some big saves so far. And I really wonder sometimes if that youngest player, youngest player award really should have gone to him. And if they don't just start, MLS is very bad. We saw that with the goalkeeper of the year thing as well. Should have gone to Andre Blake. I think they gave it to Matt Turner more for his U.S. men's national team than necessarily league exploits. They need that. They're really bad about that. They'll go choose U.S. men's national team players over actual players that are worthy instead. So that conference, the conference finals are set, Eric. And now after this weekend, when we come back on Sunday, we will know who is in the MLS Cup final. And that should be two dandy, hopefully two really good games when we get down.
I'm looking forward to them.
Yes, very much so. Now, let's go into the international for a little bit here before we end things with NWSL and U.S. Women's National. A lot of movement in the NWSL as their season has now ended. So a lot of things have been changing. And then another sad story we have to talk about, unfortunately. So Intercontinental playoffs have been set for everyone here. CONCACAF got a gift. They will play the winner of the Oceania competition, which most of the time has been New Zealand, but they have been a little bit hampered with the COVID protocols and everything. So we'll see if it winds up being New Zealand or another squad. Whichever one, considering what Mexico had to go through, you would think that whoever it is that winds up in that fourth spot really has an advantage, especially now that you're not going home and home, you're just going to one game. You would think that in the one game, that CONCACAF team should definitely have the advantage, even if it is a Panama or a Jamaica or a Costa Rica. You would think that they definitely still have an advantage over New Zealand. But we'll see who gets there when we get to it. On the other side is South America against the Asian Confederation. So that one's going to be a bit tougher, especially if it's, let's say, in Australia or Japan, which it very well could be the way that things have been shaping up. Iran and Saudi Arabia have really been doing well on that end of the table. So, you know, that's going to be a lot of changes there, depending on teams that you usually don't see on the end. I mean, so hopefully that one should be much more of an interest. You know, let's say we get a Japan or Australia going up against that fifth South American. If it's a Peru or Uruguay or even a Bolivia has really come back and become a force lately. So
that one's really cool. Going to be the must see.
I really hope it'd be really cool to see Bolivia get into that spot and maybe perhaps make that World Cup. It's been a long time for them, and you know, so it could even be a Colombia. So the way things are going, it's really tight. Once you get past the Brazil, Argentina, who've already qualified, and then Ecuador, it's really tight in the middle there. So. And every team except, unfortunately, Venezuela, who's been terrible, has a chance to qualify still. So, yeah, that's the Intercontinental playoffs. But then you get into the European playoff bracket. And, man, this is really – talk about, like, the way they've done this. It's crazy, Eric.
There's drama. There's already drama. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, you're only going to see one of Italy or Ronaldo in Portugal. You're not going to get to see both because they're in the same pathway. And it's crazy that we have gotten to this point where they have made, I don't know if these pathways are made because of COVID and trying to get them not to travel so much.
Well,
or if the, you know.
Well, how it worked was when you had the 12th, you had your top six UEFA group runners up who were seeded. And then
the other ones that are not seeded.
Right, the other ones and the ones who came out of the nation, they were unseeded. So you had to pair up, you know, your seedings versus your unseeded. It just so happened Portugal and then Italy were both, Portugal was, because they finished on a knife edge against the Czech Republic. But the way that the group shook out, it's like, you weren't hoping to see that, but then there it was, Portugal, Italy being both
seeded. Yeah.
They had to go up against unseeded teams. It just so happened they were both drawn in paths. So,
yeah. So this is how this is going to go if things work out. So Scotland and the Ukraine face each other. Wales and Austria. Whoever wins there, you would think that perhaps it's Scotland and Wales, but it could be Scotland and Austria. Ukraine has been a force. These are happening in March, by the way, the end of March. So that last window where we're, you know, doing these games is when these games will happen. That last World Cup window. Not the first one in January, February, but when you get to March. So after that, you have Russia, Poland, Sweden, and Czech Republic. I know Rachel will be watching that one with bated breath to have Russia go against Robert Lewandowski to see if they make the playoff. And then Sweden, Czech Republic as well. Will Zlatan come back for this one? And then you get Italy and Portugal. Look, now watch out, because the way Portugal have been playing, they could just get upset by Turkey, and we're not even talking about.
They could.
When it's like, and North Macedonia has been interesting as well. So with the way Italy and Portugal have both been kind of staggering through, both of them could be eliminated, honestly.
I mean, the one I would see more likely, Portugal being eliminated by Turkey. Not to say that North Macedonia has to play the perfect game, but it's like they are less likely to catch Italy napping.
Right.
Because even though you don't have a whole tremendous amount lately up front for the Azzurri, defensively, they're still very stout. Now, if North Macedonia comes in, kind of a freak sort of counterattack, they can go ahead and nick a goal, park the bus from there. It could easily happen.
Yeah, the only advantage Portugal has is that obviously they're playing at home against Turkey, and then they will play at home against Italy or North Macedonia. The thing with Poland needs to watch out. Russia's been a very hot team. So even though they have Robert Lewandowski, it's not a guarantee. Will definitely be interesting. Hopefully, I'm hoping Scotland does get through. It's been a long time since we've seen Scotland. You
know, Tartan Army come out in force.
Yeah, and even Wales, you know, they have been on a kind of miraculous one as well. So either way, you get one for the UK team there. But yeah, that's going to be interesting when we're talking about who makes these intercontinental playoffs. And how we get through there, for sure. So that's it for the Intercontinental playoffs. Now we move on to talking about NWSL Women's National Team. And so the U.S. Women's National Team had their two games set against Australia. They won the first one 3-0. You know, some big goals on that end. I really enjoyed watching highlights of this, and I watched some of that behind the crest thing. They went to a zoo in Australia, and you got to see the players interacting with all the different kinds of animals and that kind of thing. Sam Kerr had some shots in this one that had an opportunity to actually get a goal for Australia, but the goalkeeper Murphy was actually fantastic in that first game. She stopped everything and had some terrific saves. And so, you know, the one player I think that sticks out from both games, from what I saw, I thought Mitch Purse set up something for both games on goals. And I thought that's somebody that you really need to look at as far as continuing to bring them in to the next group of, you know, whatever the next group of games. And I like the way they showed Vlatko's speech for that first game. And he's just like, everything now is a World Cup final. Every single game that we play. So you got to go out there and try to win all these games. It's like, damn, you know, I don't think you need to put that much pressure on them, but sure.
But you got to love the passion, though.
Yeah, you got to love the passion, but it's like, you don't need to put that much pressure on. These are still friendlies, right? But, I mean, it is important because if you look at just even CONCACAF, right, Mexico has become a much better team now with the Liga Femenil there. They beat Canada. They haven't done that much in all these years, so it really is becoming like almost like a three-headed monster, much like we're seeing on the men's side now. So, you know, the U.S. does really need to take some of these games seriously, and Australia is still a very good opponent that you're playing against. A draw in the first game, they had an opportunity to very close at the end. Lindsay Horan had a goal that was called back on the second one that would have got her the win, or would have got the U.S. the win for both games. But I think you still got to be positive coming out of those two games to get a win and a decisive win 3-0 and then get the draw on the other end. Very good on that.
Oh, yeah. It was, and especially for that 3-0 win, it was another one of those kind of slow starters. You thought, okay, maybe something had happened, but then the U.S. really took charge in the second half. They made it their 3-0 win, putting their foot down. So it's like, all right, everything is still pretty much mostly normal when it comes to the women's national.
Yeah, and even with them, you know, doing what we've seen with the men's players and starting over kind of and having to start, you know, from scratch of saying, okay, we have new, well, we're not like everybody's not new, but we're having to bring in a new crop of players, bring in several. I mean, Ashley Hatch goal in the first couple of minutes in the first game, Ashley Hatch goal again very early. So Ashley Hatch continued her scoring from Washington Spirit on to what we see with the United States Women's National Team. So that's great for her. On that end, I mean, like you have, you know, you're saying goodbye to a lot of these goal scorers that have been the standard for moving forward, you know, to now having to bring in a whole new team. And it's good to see that you're not losing that, you know, mm-hmm. and having Ashley Hatch be a clear defined goal scorer for you. I mean, Lynn Williams was really good in the first game as well. So, like, I think you have some of that set up. The back line, I think, is still work in progress so far. So you have that to look forward to. I mean, obviously Alyssa Nair is not back, but again, Murphy has been fantastic for the US Women's National Team. So I think from what you've seen in both these games, I think really, I think you got to hand it to Vladko for really, I think, pick it. This is the first time he's really got to pick his squad, right? Because he had to play the old players for the Olympics, and then he had to pick for that first couple of games, he had to pick still the Olympic team. So this is really where he's been able to like bring in some of these younger players and be able to say, okay, this is going to be our core now. You know, the Rose Lavelles, the Lynn Williams, the Margaret Person, the Ashley Sanchez's, they're going to be your core. Lindsey Horan's going to be another one, your core player. You know, all these older players, you'll still see them in NWSL and everything, but they're not going to be a main focus for us in what we're going to see after that. So, you know, I think that's the thing for the U.S. is continuing to go that route. You know, you got to see Morgan Weaver make her first start. You know, you got to see Ashley Sanchez make her first start. So, like, you're getting Ashley Hass makes her first start. So, like, that's really good for the U.S. Women's National Team and how we're going with that and how you're going to move on from this. Obviously, a lot of time still.
Oh, yeah.
You know, before you get into any meaningful action, but so good to see that.
Yeah, I mean, and especially at the sort of like the beginning of a cycle like this, this is the perfect time to do it. And hats off to Vlaco for it's like, all right, I've got all of this time to rebuild. I'm going to take all of it, do so, see what I've got.
Yeah, for sure. Sadly, we have to talk about another sad story in NWSL. The season may be over right after the championship game. It was found out that Rory Dane, who had been the head coach for the Red Stars for such a long time, for 11 years, Eric, 11 years. You know, the Washington Post published a report that, you know, he had been emotionally and verbally abusing players. And that's terrible.
And it's a real shame because, number one, you would think, especially in such a position of long tenured power, like you would have some idea that you don't necessarily need to do it. Something is up with you if you go ahead and push that far. And number two, this is continuing to be sad for the NWSL as a whole because just to think and you're going through and you're rooting out all of these problems and all of these problematic situations, you realize it still goes, and it was more pervasive, realized. So I'm glad that the right action was done, at least in some sense, and it was resolved. But as you said, 11 years, something couldn't have happened sooner. It's ugly.
Yeah, this is, Kristen Press is the person that really instigated all this. You know, she filed a complaint with Sanoa Gulati in 2014, and then in 2018, after she was no longer with the Red Stars, she also filed a complaint with U.S. Soccer. And the second complaint not only involved her, but included many several players. And this a quote from one of her many columns that she wrote between 2014, 2015, while she was with the U.S. World Cup team. I was terrified of what Rory would do, and say he found out there was something I had said. And then when I was made to feel by U.S. Soccer that I was in the wrong, because Sunil Gulati said that there's normal action for a coach, that there was nothing to retort. For so many women in this league, you think you don't have any worth. And if you stand up and you say what you think, it's right or wrong, nobody cares. Wow.
And you've got to go through a lot to really feel that way and to articulate those words. And given the lack of action, Miss, I see where she's coming from. And this was another big issue, still is, in U.S. soccer. So it's not just the NWSL that had to really look at themselves. They really got to look at themselves in U.S. Soccer House and just really ask, why does this get to keep happening? And why do we look like this when our players, stars or not, complain and say, hey, I need help. This is a thing. I never really understand that. To say that it was like a normal behavior. No, you can go ahead to be aggressive in certain ways, but there's no need ever to be any sort of abusive. Come on now.
Yeah. Looking at some of these things, apparently he yelled at a player on the field, if you can't talk on the field, what kind of mother are you? What does that have to do with anything that...
What does that even mean?
What does that have to do with anything that is going on? It's like that's not a way to motivate a player. Like, and that's just one quote. I mean, I'm sure there are many, and especially with how Kristen Press felt, I'm sure that he really took it out on her. He's a star, or she is a star, but like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, she is one of the leaders of the team, so a lot of times they will suffer more internal pressure than, say, another role player, because they take on a lot of the pressure themselves. It's just, it's incredible to me that this continues to happen. He is now the fifth male coach that's been part of NWSL that has been taken down. The only one that remains is Houston's James Clarkson. Three other coaches are resigned to take other coach jobs, and one was reassigned to a new technical role. So is this now the time that we're finally going to have women coaching? We already saw the Thorns make a decision on their coach, and it is a female coach. And now the Orlando Pride have also made a decision on their coach. Amanda Duffy she parted ways as their executive vice president of soccer, but they've made the decision to bring in UCLA women's coach and Amanda Crowell as the new head coach. She actually took UCLA to a championship in 2013 university, and then she spent 14 years coaching with UCF. So she has some pedigree there in the college game. And I think that's what matters, right? Is like, you're bringing in, you're not bringing in a Jill Ellis or somebody else that has like a big name, Eric, but what you got
to
do?
You do. Right? And you don't always have to bring in the big names, but you have these coaches and some with titles. You're giving them these chances and you can help them become bigger names, and that's really what can be the key for any league. So I approve that, even though there's not a lot going on right now, there's not a lot that they got right in Michigan, that they're really committed to turning this around, and they're really going, in some senses, outside of the box for this new crop of coaches to come in, and I would love to see what they would do.
Yeah, I really want to keep, let's promote these younger coaches. Let's, bring in coaches from the college ranks to coach these. They got to get experience somewhere.
Exactly.
Right? Like, this isn't the opportunity that you have with the men to go coach. I mean, yes, they could go try to coach in the WSL or the, European leagues, whatever, but it's not the same as what we see with some of the men. And even that, a lot of the American coaches don't do a Jesse March or Bob Bradley or whatever. They stay in the system, right? So, like, you need to promote from within, from these. This is where you're getting these players from in the draft, right? So why not get some of these coaches as well? And that's great for the Thorns and for Orlando to make these decisions. Let's hope we see more of that as, more teams being added. And speaking of teams being added, we have new teams coming in to this season for the NWSL, and many of those new are making waves already. San Diego Wave have brought in Abby Dahlkamper, you know, a U.S. Women's National Team defender. She was playing with Houston, but they made a three-way trade. And Joe Ellis, who's the president, at the Wave, and of course, played under Jill at UCLA, knows her well, played under her with the U.S. Women's National Team. So bringing in a star like Dawn Camper is great for the San Diego Wave. And she's won championships before as well. You get that experience there, Eric. Not to mention, you also get some a big movement here from the Red Stars. So Rory Dames leave, and now they trade six players to either Angel City FC or San Diego Wave.
I mean, your two new California clubs are going to be getting quite the talent to really upstack their rosters. And Chicago was like, well, maybe even after this, just clean house, try to rebuild, build a new atmosphere from the ground up, starting with like players on the pitch who are willing to go ahead, be there through all of this time. And in some ways, it kind of works for everybody.
Yeah, it does. So you get Julie Ertz and Sarah Gordon going to Angel City FC. So you get an awesome move for Angel City to get a great player like Julie Ertz to go over there, bring the, all of that experience to Angel City, and whoever else is going to go to that team. You know, she's went through a little bit of an injury spell recently, but she was very consistent in her first six in the VLC. And then the Red Stars also traded Katie Johnson and Mackenzie Doniak. Whenever Doniak almost scored, you know, tie the game up for the Red Stars in the end of the NWSL championship. And then Kelsey Turnbull, who's playing fantastic for Santa Clara University, still one of the players, women in the Women's College Cup there, they're going to San Diego. So this is obviously allowing for a protection in that expansion draft that's going to come up for both those teams. But San Diego's getting some really good players as well. And we already heard about Dawn Camper. And then Nicole Stanton's also going to the OL Reign for a third round draft pick. So a lot of movement for the Red Stars, who are cleaning house and getting some of these players out of that toxic environment and into a new environment. And then obviously getting to whoever's going to come in after Dames is getting to kind of formulate the team and their vision and bring in their own players. So that's good for those players. And also Sam Mewis, U.S. Women's National Team veteran, she's going to move on. She's going to move on to Kansas City. There was a trade there from the Courage to Kansas City for defender Kiki Pickett. And then also the Wave's first round pick in the 2022 NWSL draft. So a lot of movement there. And Kansas City now gets a very experienced player that has won championships and everything as well. So a lot of movement happening in WSL, Eric.
A lot of movement, but teams are getting some great building blocks to really start their life in NWSL. I'm digging it.
Yeah, I'm digging it. I'm glad to see it. We'll see what happens with the draft as well. And, well, that's going to do it for us here on this edition of Soccer to the Max. We'll be back in a few days, if all goes well, to talk about the MLS conference finals, anything else that's been happening in WSL. The men's national team camp should be coming together pretty soon here with that friendly against Bosnia-Herzegovina. So there may be some movement on that front as well. And then, of course, what happens on the weekend with Manchester United and the rest of the leagues. We'll have a question about, you know, once we get through those Sunday matchups, we'll definitely have a question about who we think is going to win the league in England, and if it's still going to be a three-team race going all the way through. So look out for that. You can follow Eric at Squid Sports Head. You can follow me at WTM Sean. Go check out the whole WTM network. If you subscribe to that, you get everything that we do, which involves Mark's entertainment stuff. You know, they just reviewed Encanto. They reviewed the Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City. A lot of stuff for them to go talk about. You had the Life is Like a Game show for Eric, which you can go check out. Just had a new video game show as well drop with Mark. We talked about the Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and some other things going on as well. More League to the Max happening as well. Our League of Legends show that also has Eric on it. So go check that out. And well, you know, until then, you know, hit that. If you like watching on YouTube, you can hit subscribe, ring that bell. Anytime we do a show, it's there. And of course, you can just subscribe to Soccer the Mess and get us every time we do the show as well. So until, a couple of days, folks, we'll see you later.
Peace.